I'm going to turn in our Bibles to Joshua 4. I'm going to read from verse 1. When the whole nation had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, "Choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe, and tell them to take up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, from right where the priests stood, and to carry them over with you and put them down at the place where you stay tonight." So Joshua called together the 12 men he had appointed from the Israelites, one from each tribe, and said to them, "Go over before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of the Jordan. Each of you is to take up a stone on his shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of the Israelites, to serve as a sign among you. In the future, when your children ask you, 'What do these stones mean?' tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever." So the Israelites did as Joshua commanded them. They took 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, according to the number of the tribes of the Israelites, as the Lord had told Joshua. And they carried them over with them to their camp, where they put them down. Joshua set up the 12 stones that had been in the middle of the Jordan at the spot where the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant had stood. And they are there to this day. Now the priests who carried the Ark remained standing in the middle of the Jordan, and until everything the Lord had commanded Joshua was done by the people, just as Moses had directed Joshua. The people hurried over, and as soon as all of them had crossed, the ark of the Lord and the priests came to the other side while the people watched. The men of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh crossed over armed in front of the Israelites as Moses had directed them. About 40,000 armed for battle crossed over before the Lord to the plains of Jericho for war. That day the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they revered him all the days of his life, just as they had revered Moses. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "Command the priests carrying the Ark of the Testimony to come up out of the Jordan." So Joshua commanded the priests, "Come up out of the Jordan." And the priests came up out of the river, carrying the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. No sooner had they set their feet on the dry ground than the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and ran in flood as before. On the 10th day of the first month, the people went up from the Jordan and camped at Gilgal on the eastern border of Jericho. And Joshua set up at Gilgal the 12 stones they had taken from the Jordan. He said to the Israelites, "In the future, when your descendants ask their fathers, 'What do these stones mean?' tell them, 'Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the Jordan before you until you had crossed over. The Lord your God did to the Jordan what he had done to the Red Sea when he dried up before us, when he dried it up before us until we'd crossed over. He did this so that all the peoples of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful, and so that you might always fear the Lord your God." We all have a story to tell. Some very simple things I want to draw out this morning. And the first is the story itself. And I'll put a big word up. God. We all have a story to tell, and the key to start is this word, God. Verse 1 of chapter 4. First verse that I read, when the whole nation had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, this is what you're to do. So God had set them up for an extraordinary event. In the previous chapter, chapter 3, we read how God had directed Joshua to direct the people to cross over the River Jordan. When the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, stepped into the river, what we're told is that the water stopped flowing and piled up upstream. So there was dry ground for everyone to cross over. And it was an extraordinary event, I'm sure, when the priests put their toes in the water. All the people understanding what they'd been told to do, understanding the expectation of what was about to happen, would have held their breath and thought, will it? Won't it? What's going to happen? God has promised. God's done this before. The Red Sea? Is this what he's going to do again? And with their hearts in their mouths, holding their breath, the priests step into the water and begin to cross over. And immediately the water backs up and is piled up upstream. And the priests stand there on dry ground. Now, the Lord speaks to Joshua and says, okay, now this has taken place. Choose 12 men from among you, each of which is to take one big stone from the center of the Jordan. And what we understand as the chapter goes on, as the story is told, that the point of these stones is to have a pile of stones so that in later generations, when their children and their children's children and their children's children's children down the generations, when they come to this spot and they see the stones, they will say, what are these stones for? Why are they piled? Can we move them? Can we play? What are they about? And there will be a story to tell. When your children ask you, tell them what God has done. But it was God. Here in verse 1, the Lord speaks to Joshua and says, do this so that you might have a story to tell. And the story we have is encouraged by God. The story we have to tell, the stories, the three little stories we heard this morning, I believe God encourages us to note what he does, to remember what he does, and to tell the story of what he does. That's what God did for Joshua. Do this so that you might have a story to tell. And he would encourage us, be good at seeing, at thinking, at remembering, at noting what God has done and is doing, so that you might have a story to tell. Which is why earlier on I said, do you have a story to tell? If you do, it's because God encourages you to have a story to tell. So it begins with God. The second thing, seeing the story. Seeing the story. Look down at verse 11. Right down at the bottom of that page. Well, it begins, the people hurried over, and as soon as all of them had crossed, the ark of the Lord and the priests came to the other side while the people, what does it say? Watched. While they watched. Something amazing is taking place right in front of their eyes, and the people stand and watch. They are in awe of what they are seeing. And not only do we need to understand that God encourages us to tell the story, he wants us to have a story to tell. But this necessitates us having eyes to see what has happened. When God spoke to Ezekiel, the prophet Ezekiel, God spoke to Ezekiel and said, you know, the problem with the people and the reason they're going to go into exile, the reason they're going to lose their inheritance, they're going to lose hold of everything I promised to them and gave to them, the reason they're going to lose it is because they have eyes to see, but they have not seen. And I wonder how often How often has God been doing things right in front of me, and I've seen them, but I've not really seen them? I've seen what's taken place. I can tell you, well, this happened or that happened, but I've not seen them in the sense of saying, God has done this. So seeing what's taken place is one thing, but understanding God was involved. Now, I guess Peter told a story this morning. Or Paul. Sorry. I was calling you Peter all morning, wasn't I? We heard the story about your wife's frozen arm. Now, I guess that's the kind of story we can say, oh, well, there's a rational explanation, of course. And in a sense, we have eyes to see what took place. But then God's encouragement to us is to truly see. To see, well, I was praying, and this happened as a consequence. And to see what happened, and then to say, this is what God has done. This is my story about what God has done. And this, of course, is the curse of materialism that says it's only, you know, it's only relevant if it is physical and we can touch it and we can see it with our own eyes. But any explanation about emotions or spirits, well, we just rule all of that out. Seeing the story, I wonder, this last week, what has God been doing in our lives? What has God been doing right next to us? And He would have it that we would see what God has been doing. For Joshua, God said, go and get some stones, because I want there to be a story to be told here. The people stood in awe and amazement and watched as the priests came up out of the water, out of the river, and then the water flowed back. So it begins with the story. The second thing is seeing the story. The third is sharing the story. Now we go back to verse 2 of chapter 4. Begins verse 1, when the whole nation had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe. What was he doing? Sharing the story. This is for everyone. God has done something amazing. Clearly, it was God that had done it. That was the story that was to be told. God did this. But I wonder how the priests felt about it. After all, the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant, they were the ones who'd had to actually take those first steps and put their feet in the water first. Where would they have been, the priests, if they had stepped into the water and nothing had happened? Would Joshua have said, keep going? Going into this river that was in flood. You know, it would have been our lives on the line, they would say. You know, we were the ones who would be swept away if nothing had happened. It's our story. It's all about us. But no, it's not just about those priests who stepped into the water, and as they stepped into the water, so it stopped flowing. It's a story, God says, that is to be shared. It is to be shared out so that we can all take hold of it and say, this is what God has done. And the chances are, this next week, if I have the opportunity, I will be able to say, well, do you know, somebody at church said on Sunday that at 2 o'clock in the morning, they were prompted by God to pray. It's a story that you've shared, and if you don't mind, I will share it. Because it's a story about what God's goodness and kindness. So God says to Joshua in verse 2, choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe. Tell them to take up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, from right where the priest stood, and carry them over with you. Put them down at the place where you stay tonight. It's a story when God does something wonderful. It's not a story that we keep to ourselves, but it's a story we tell It's a story we share so that we all can, in a sense, own that story and share it, because really the story belongs to God. So the story, seeing the story, sharing the story. And the third, or the fourth point rather, is the story as a signpost. The story as a signpost. Let's look down towards the end of the chapter. In verse 21, he said to the Israelites, "In the future, when your descendants ask their fathers, 'What do these stones mean?' point out the reason for these stones. What are they about? What do they signify?" Verse 22, "Tell them, 'Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground, for the Lord your God dried up the Jordan before you until you had crossed over. The Lord your God did to the Jordan just what he had done to the Red Sea when he dried it up before us until we crossed over. He did this so that all the peoples of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful, and so that you might always fear the Lord your God." And we can look back at verse 6. "To serve as a sign among you in the future when the children ask you, 'What do these stones mean?' tell them the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord." The story of what God is doing today is a signpost for the children of tomorrow. What God does today is intended to be an inspiration and encouragement for tomorrow. And Joshua, in the first passage I just read, "The Lord your God did to the Jordan just what he had done to the Red Sea." See, already the tradition of telling stories about what God had done was there among the people. That was how Joshua could say, "Do you remember what God did with the Red Sea? Do you remember how when Moses and the people of Israel were standing on the edge of the Red Sea and they had the Egyptian army chasing them, God instructed Moses to strike the water, and as he struck the water, so the waters parted and they were able to cross over on dry land." The story had been told. And the story had been told so that people would remember that the Lord is a living God. He's not a dead God, but he lives. And what he does yesterday, he can do again today, and then he can do again tomorrow. You know, I love the image that the Bible paints of, you know, with the phrase, "the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." I really like that. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I like the idea that Abraham sat his son on his lap. Have you done that with your kids? And you've told them a story. A real story, a true story about something that happened to you. I like to imagine that Abraham sat Isaac on his lap. And Isaac said, "Tell me the one about when God took you into the land." And Abraham said, "Well, son, it was like this. I stood on the land, on this piece of land just here. And God said, 'Take a good look, because everywhere you see, I will give to you and your descendants.'" "Wow, Dad. Tell me another one." You know, and so it went on. And then when Jacob sat on Isaac's lap, Jacob said, "Isaac," well, they said, "Dad, can you tell me the story how you met your wife? Tell me the story about this other thing that happened when God was involved in your life." And so there is this tradition, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and entailed just in that phrase are all the stories to do with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And they would use that to signify that God was a living God. He was not dead. And just as God had done wonderful things for Abraham, so he did those wonderful things for Isaac. And then he repeated those wonderful things for Jacob. And then later on, people would speak about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God who is able to do amazing things right here, right now. And it is at the beginning of the book of Exodus that we are told the people who are in slavery in Egypt, they cry out to God, and the message comes, I, the God of Abraham, Isaac and Jacob, have heard their cry. And then when Moses is called by God, what shall I say to the people? Who is it who's speaking to me? Tell them I am, has spoken. Tell them the God of Abraham, Isaac and Jacob. And all the stories about the God who's able to act in the past is able to act in the present to inspire the future. Tell them the God of Abraham, Isaac and Jacob is coming for them and will set them free. And it's this understanding of the signpost, the story as a signpost, the stories that remind us, and we need to hear the stories to encourage us. Our story, my story. Now, I'll put up here, it's not a very good picture. I've put this up quite a few times this year, but this is Offenham Road, just running up here, and this is a site of 4 acres that the church inherited. This is something of our story. We were with, John and I and Tristan were with the architect that the church has appointed, Alan Joyce. And there was just a couple of moments where I told again our story. Just very simply telling, you know, because we had appointed Alan to be our architect when we were still here and thinking about building or extending, doing something to our premises here. Saying, yes, Alan, do you remember we appointed you, we interviewed you and appointed you, but the extraordinary thing is we prayed and we believe God answered our prayer and gave us this land. And it's amazing how God has taken that on. And now Wychavon us have highlighted this particular area of land all the way over here as their priority site, they hope, to build houses on so that we might be a church in the centre of a community. Now, we didn't know that at the time, but God, our story, God has done extraordinary things. I met somebody just a few weeks ago and they said, you know, how's things going in the church and so on. And I think, well, where do I start? But a good story to tell is this story. So I tell this story because it's what God, the God of Abraham, Isaac and Jacob, has done. The living God has done this. And the response, this person, because of his business, happens to own a limousine, an 8-seater, very nice Mercedes limousine. And he started to say, what can I do? Immediately he wanted to share the story. What can I do? And he said, look, I've got this limousine. If any of your folk want to borrow that limousine for weddings, trip to the theatre, guys, you want to treat your partner, or whatever, they can have it. And I will give my services as a chauffeur for free. And they can pay the cheque to the building fund at Evesham Baptist Church. And it was just, he wanted to engage with the story. That's something of our story. It was lovely, just almost a year ago, celebrating together our 275th anniversary, and particularly on the anniversary day, when we had visitors from all over the place who came back, and there were stories being shared together about what God had done. They were like stones that had been built up from the middle of the River Jordan. Said, what do these stones mean? Why are we here? What is happening? A reminder to us that the living God is with us. On Friday afternoon, I put my story. On Friday afternoon, I was standing in the playground waiting to pick up the kids from school. And somebody I know came into the playground, stood next to me. Hi, Ed. How you doing? Fine. You know, all that kind of stuff. What have you got planned for the weekend? He said. So I've got a breakfast meeting tomorrow morning. Great breakfast, John. And probably in the garden the rest of the day. And he said, how about Sunday? What do you do Sunday? Knowing I'm a minister. So I just said the programme for today. And he said, forgive me, I'm quite ignorant. I have no idea what goes on in church. So I talked briefly about it. And then I said, and he was just concerned about church being like a foreign culture. You know, and somebody, I don't know when the last time was he went to church, but he was concerned, you know, if ever he went into a church, he wouldn't know what to do, whether stand up, sit down, sing the hymn, read the Bible, whatever. And I said, you know, something amazing happened to us earlier this year. And I told him the story about the mystery worshipper. Do you remember? The mystery worshipper who came and, are we a welcoming church? Are we a friendly church? Is it a safe place to be? And so on. And I said, we were so chuffed about having such a positive response. Now, that was a little story I told about this church to that particular person to say, look, it's a safe place. This is what God has done and is doing among us. And then I was sitting at Jam Club on Friday evening. And part of Jam Club, we have a craft activity together. And I always try with the kids to sit down and make whatever craft it is. It's normally more challenging for me than at all the kids. But there I was trying to do this particular craft. And one of the girls, I was sitting on a table with four girls, and a girl opposite me said, Ed, when did you become a Christian? I said, well, I became a Christian when I was 12. Ah. How did that happen then? So what did I tell? A story. A story about what God had done. And I told the story about how when I was at school, I said I was brought up in a Christian family and so I went to church all my life. I was at school and somebody had a conversation. And I said, I knew. Even though I was talking to this guy and he said, are you a Christian? I said, yes. Do you believe in Jesus? I said, yes. Do you believe that Jesus died on the cross for your sin? I was saying yes. And all the time I said I was saying yes. And then I said, do you know what it feels like when you tell a lie? And they went, yes. I said, I knew I was telling lies. Because I didn't really believe in Jesus. But I knew I had to. And I said, I went to my next class, room 4, I said, and I put my head in the desk.